Well, back in the 80s, there was a sitcom. You know, a lot of sitcoms out there. Some of them run a year. Some of them run 10 years. This one probably didn't have a very long running. It was called The Dinosaurs. I don't even remember The Dinosaurs. I hesitate to tell you about that one because it kind of, well, first it reveals my age and my twisted sense of humor. But these claymation dinosaurs were interesting because they were kind of a family. They had a mom and a dad and a couple teenage kids and a baby dinosaur, and they were like human-like. They spoke English. They wore clothes. They lived in a house. The dad went to work. The mom took care of the house, kind of your traditional family, except the fact they were dinosaurs. And one of the ongoing themes of the show was that the father was always trying to build that relationship with his baby dinosaur. But that he was a little tear, okay? He was doing all sorts of crazy things, outlandish things, to get whatever he wanted, whether it was attention or food or presence. And so he was like the main attraction and the center of the universe. That's what he wanted to get by to everybody. The whole thing was really a woeful situation, but it made for great comic relief. Who doesn't like to sit down? That's why it's called a sitcom, right? It's comedy. You want to sit down. You want to forget kind of some of the things that are going on in your life and enjoy that sort of thing. And so that's what happened in that little thing. The major phrase in that show was called "not the mama." Okay? Anytime the father would come into the room, the baby dinosaur would yell out, "not the mama." And you might ask, why would I reference such a goofy, silly show from the 80s? Well, it's because when we think about the birth of our country, we're not the mama to that. We are the children. We are the recipients. We weren't there in 1776 when the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia and declared war on England and signed the Declaration of Independence. That's 250 years ago. That's why we're going to celebrate that. We weren't around when the colonies voted to bear arms against the mother country. And the mother country wanted all our goods and they wanted all our services, but they didn't want to give us representation. We're probably, what, 8 generations, maybe 8 or 10 generations removed from that monumental time in American life, history. We could go back further into history. We could go back even to 1620 when the pilgrims came to the, quote-unquote, the New World. They came here obeying what they believed God's will for their lives were, to put down roots in a new land so they could live in freedom. They could, and as their conscience dictated that they should, and their faith. And they suffered numerous hazards, prejudice, persecution, theft, robbery, a broken ship, the weather. They landed like in November or something. It was terrible. And some of this, all this happened before they ever left the shores of Europe. All that stuff happened to them before that. We're now, what, maybe 12, 13 generations removed from the time that this small contingency of people made the courageous decision to follow God, much like Abraham did in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis 12, God said to Abraham, "Leave your country, your people, your father's household. Go to the land I will show you." And they did it voluntarily. No disrespect to Australia, but a lot of the people who went to Australia, they didn't go voluntarily. They went because somehow they had committed some sort of crime, and the law said, now we're going to transport you. Sorry, Grandpa, I didn't mean to. This on Australia. Well, okay. In a sense, we've missed out on many of the most monumental events and watershed moments when it came to the historical journey of the United States. We weren't there for that. We can only read about it. Maybe you can watch it on TV as some sort of a documentary sort of thing. They do that all the time. I'm really interested. Sometime I want to go to a Civil War reenactment. That's kind of one of my bucket list items, you know. But who knows if that'll happen. I guess I'll be on the north side. I don't know. But think about the discovery and exploration of our country. Think of Lewis and Clark. Or think of the moon landing. These are historical events that, for the most, we missed. Oh, we might have, maybe some of us saw it on TV, the moon landing, maybe. The pioneering and the establishment of this country, its organization, its fight for freedom, its struggle to maintain unity, That was a big one, the Civil War. To recognize that each person, as God's creation, deserved the gift of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Many of us even miss the call to help other people and nations fight for their freedoms and their liberties. We think about places where the United States have gone to fight wars overseas, whether it was in France or Vietnam or other places. We missed all that. Maybe not all of us. Maybe some of us have served in different aspects. We're not the mama of any of that. Instead, we're the children. We're the offspring of those who had a great vision and who said to themselves and to others, we are convinced that mankind can actually live in harmony with one another, with their neighbor, if only the individuals look to God for governance in their own personal lives. And I think this is why this is so important. If people look to God to help them govern their own personal lives, a lot of the stress and the turmoil and the chaos that we see around us, it wouldn't happen. But see, we're not the mamas nor the papas. Oh, I'm not talking about the 60s singing group there. We are the beneficiaries. It's nice to be beneficiaries. We're not the benefactors. I always got those two mixed up, you know, when I was trying to understand the English language. Now, what is the benefactor? What is the beneficiary? We are the beneficiaries of those who have gone ahead of us, who paved the way often with their own body and their blood and sacrifices, personal sacrifices. And so when this country came into formation, this nation was truly born a nation under God. And we can really take no credit for its formation, even as we can sit here and marvel about its existence. We can. No other country, when you think about it, has what we have. Has built the whole, from the beginning, the foundation, an establishment of each person having individual rights. That even, it says in the Constitution, the inalienable right under God, we're created equal. Now, it took us a long time to get that one right, obviously. But it was at least on paper, and that took, we had to catch up, right? Our own, the reality of that. But here's the point I want to make this morning, and that is, though we were not there at the foundation, we weren't there at the founding, it doesn't mean that there's not more very significant events that lie ahead of us. That's important for us to understand. We can't just sit here and say we have no skin in the game. We can't just say, oh, well, this is what we've inherited. I guess I'll just have to make do. The conception of the country, the deliverance of the country, the delivering, the nurturing, sort of like having a baby. This country, though it has this beginning of this country, it was not easy, it was not glamorous, and yet it is still just the beginning. As Beth reminded us, that we're still somewhat in our infancy at 250 years. And we think about the countries of the world that have been along. Now, some have come into existence since then. They kind of got broken up and redistributed or reestablished. By the way, there was some person that stopped. Now, you talked to him, had been here many, many years ago, went to church here. And you didn't know him, but Beth, being here for 60 years or so, she probably would have known him, but I guess we didn't catch the name. But you see, even our country, though, it's past the infancy stage. We're no longer the cute little baby whose tantrums are comical and are fairly contained and it makes us want to reach, grab our camera and take a picture of that little monster. No. We're growing up, physically anyway. But what about spiritually? What about mentally and spiritually? Look at our society we live in. It's, in many ways, it's continually to unravel in many ways. Maybe it's corruption of whatever. Maybe it's stealing. Maybe it's murdering. Maybe it's abortion. Maybe it's taking our little ones and grooming them to embrace immoral behavior. These things are happening all around us. Maybe it's just the plain disregard for human civility. You know, you pull out with your car and somebody cuts you off and you want to shake your fist, or where's the human civility? But we know deep down, and here's the thing, we know deep down it's because we've turned our hearts away from God. We have decided, many of us have decided, that we know better than God. And we also know this, we instinctively know that this is not the way God intended us to live. We're supposed to be part of the solution, not the problem. Like, for example, when the planning committee called me and said, hey, you know, we don't want you to do this or that, or, you know, we want you to change that. Right away, I was like, I was starting to get steamed, right? I wanted to really, but then I thought, is that a Christian response? No. I could have a Christian response to this. I got to show that I'm cooperative. I want to be supportive. But sometimes we got to take a deep breath and just think about that for a second before we respond. I'll keep learning how to do that. But we want to be part of the solution, not the problem. But sometimes it's like we look at our country and say, well, the train's left the station. Nothing I can do about it now. That momentum can't be stopped. That's not a good feeling when you think that way. We should be deeply troubled and extremely concerned about the situation our country finds itself, or we find ourselves in. Their approach to, you know, not listening to God, not obeying God, not submitting to God. And the scary thing is that we're tempted to see the spiritual condition of our society and we want to retreat. We want to go into survival mode. We want to protect our own property, protect our own domain, protect our culture, even as the world around us is kind of falling apart. It's like, well, nothing I can do there. Let's just kind of, you know, fortify the compound. You ever feel that way? I sometimes feel that way. Sometimes I think to myself, Bill, though, you can't even organize your sock drawer. How am I supposed to help the world? Well, these thoughts that I have today, they're not, hopefully they're some of God's thoughts that are coming through me. God is living, God is loving, God is true. He wants us and is able to help the world and all those who live in it if we would return to Him. So what I'm saying to you this morning, that yes, we will celebrate the birth of a nation 250 years ago. But we need to celebrate the birth of even one person. Because when you think about it, or the rebirth of a person. Because when you think about it, the nation is just made up of people. And you might think, well, yeah, but the system's got me down. I can't break out of the system. A nation at its most elemental state is really a group of people trying to live together. And so the birth I'm talking about isn't the physical birth, it's a spiritual one. Our nation can begin to have a rebirth only when we individuals have a rebirth, a spiritual rebirth. Yes, we didn't get in on the ground floor when our country was born, okay? We missed that big event, no doubt about it. But that is not our fault. God calls us to live out our lives in the time He has ordained us for each of us to live. This is our time. This is God says, this is the time you're going to live. And He brings situations and people and opportunities into our lives today that no one else will ever have in their life. And only we, if we follow the Lord, can touch those people that He brings into our lives. Abraham and Jacob, the Apostle Paul and Peter, they're not here to influence our neighbors. Yes, they are. We still have their words, and we can read about them in the Bible, God's words, but it's you and me will have direct impact on their lives because we are living side beside them in real time, in real life. Recall the words of Mordecai to Esther, his relative Esther, when he was persuading her to help the Jewish people from Haman's evil scheme. Who knows but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this? We may not necessarily understand our times, okay? That's a very complex thing. Some of you may protest, Pastor, it's easy for Mordecai to say these things to Esther because she had endless resources, right? I mean, the king was in love with her. She was connected to the most powerful people in the land. She received 12 months of beauty treatments. I can't afford 12 hours of beauty treatments, let alone 12 months. She had special living quarters in the palace. She had all the luxury. And we say, we can't do that. Well, I can't even pay next month's bills. I can't even get my... How can I influence somebody's personal destiny, their eternal destiny? You might say to yourself, I'm not popular, I'm not talented, I have never met anybody famous. How can I influence somebody, their eternal destiny? You can. We can. How quickly we as Christians forget what happened to us the moment we believed. The instant we put our faith in God's Son Jesus, when God gave us faith, when God gave us grace. Remember the words of Peter in 1 Peter 1? In His great mercy has given us a new birth into a living hope. We have hope. We have that because of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish or spoil or fade, kept in heaven for us. We are shielded by God's power until the coming of salvation. We have God's power. We have salvation. We have an inheritance. We have a new birth. We have living hope. That's all that in that one couple verses. I suppose back in the revolutionary times when people had to choose a side, didn't they? Am I going to be loyal to the mother country? Or am I going to be a patriot and a revolutionary? They knew that was an extremely dangerous decision to make. It could cost them their lives. Their lives were going to have to be turned upside down, never again to be the same. But they knew everybody had to make a choice. We have to make a choice. As Christians, we have to make, and truly we have to make a choice every day. To live for God or to live for the world's temporary and fleeting joys. Which, I love the temporary and fleeting joys of life. Whether it's sitting down and watching a baseball game or, you know, eating a big steak or whatever you do. And I'm not saying those are wrong choices. I'm just saying those are temporary and fleeting choices. But we have to make tough choices. And on one hand, it's tough because you might have to endure ridicule, loss of friendships, social status, possible loss of gainful employment. We can be persecuted in many ways. And we have to say, are we willing to make that the right choice? But it's also an easy choice if we look at it from a future perspective. Someday we will bask in God's perfect and immeasurable glory for all eternity. That's what God offers us if we have faith. We will always know that we're on the right side of good and truth if we're on God's side. We know that as Christians, we can make an eternal difference in other people's lives when they come to know the Lord. And we can be part of that process. I mean, we can't save them. God does the saving. But we can facilitate in that. We know that God's perfect will is that He seeks to reconcile mankind to Himself through faith in His Son Jesus. This is why I could sit there out in the parking lot yesterday and just talk to people and be, it's like, yeah, I'm offering you something that is so much more important than whatever they're trying to sell out there. Will we have any takers? There's been a lot of great beginnings in the world. God created the heavens and the earth. He created the first man and the woman, placed them in the garden, had fellowship with them. That was a great beginning. God later on rebooted, started the human race over again. Noah and his family were put on the ark. They were safe and secure there to start the human race over again. Another new beginning. And how did all this happen? And then finally we had Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. He was given a new beginning. He said, leave this land and I'm going to and go to a land that I will show you. See, God called Abraham to live a life of faith. To leave behind that which is so familiar and so comfortable. To go to a new land, sight unseen. Damien kind of did that. You went from Puerto Rico and you came to Michigan. We're so happy you did. Now, I don't know what the future holds. Maybe you'll go back to Puerto Rico. I don't know. But we're happy to have you while you're here. But Abraham was called to leave his parents, to leave his pagan culture, to look to the one true living God. How could he do that? It took faith. You got to have faith. Not just any faith, not just a kind of a miscellaneous faith, but a faith in the all-powerful, righteous God, living God. He also called Abraham to live a life of fruitfulness. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I'll make your name great. You will be a blessing to the nations. How could Abraham do any of that unless he was not only faithful, he had to be fruitful? God calls us to be fruitful, spiritually fruitful. Paul says in Colossians, he says a prayer, it's his prayer, he says, we pray this in order that you may live a life worthy of the Lord, please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God. So God calls us to be faithful. He calls us to be fruitful. He also calls us to be his friend. And we know this because he was Abram's friend, but because he gave us the most precious gift he could give, his son. Jesus tells that there's no greater love than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. So in that act of personal sacrifice, he's saying to us, you are my friends. So don't think you've missed out on the best of what this country has to offer. Today and tomorrow are so chock full of opportunities to live by faith, to live, to work in fruitfulness, to be a friend with God. The opportunities stretch out before us, they're limitless. Because when we know that we're in Christ, eternity becomes our destiny and our reality. So our lives founded in Christ, founded on grace of God, founded on our activation of faith, even though we're 250 years along, it's just the beginning.